Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you for listening to the show, continuing to subscribe on iTunes, and giving us those five-star ratings and those comments on the iTunes page. You guys have been crushing that. Really appreciate it. It helps us climb the pod charts and continue to bring amazing shows like today, which might be up there with Danza and Melissa McCarthy for me. This was just my favorite show of all time is Curb Your Enthusiasm. All right, it's brilliant to me. I don't know. It's just it's effortless. It's genius. The way the stories are woven together. The improvisational acting is the best you'll ever see. And we got one of the stars from that show who. I feel like I already know from seeing him on the show, from seeing him around the Comedy Store the last few years, and from hassling him to do this podcast, which we finally got. And I'm talking about the one and only Jeff Garlin, baby. Jeff Garlin from Curb Your Enthusiasm, from all his Conan and late night appearances, from his movies that he wrote and directed, Dealing with Idiots and I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With, which you can get on Netflix, which you should because they're both phenomenal. And of course, he's on The Goldbergs on ABC, which is crushing it right now. So Jeff is just an all-around great dude. This episode was so fun. We covered so much. We laughed a lot. Talking about him throwing out the first pitch at Wrigley Field to living with Conan O'Brien in Chicago as roommates to the process of Curb, the possibility of the show coming back, which was definitely bonerific. And then him and Brad had a funny exchange. Jeff used to be a security guard for concerts, and we presented him with a scenario in which many dwarves rushing a stage and how he would respond, and it was hilarious. This is one of the more fun episodes we've done in a while, and really stoked for you guys to listen to it. Follow Jeff on Instagram at Jeff Garlin. Follow me on Instagram at AdamRay33. Follow Brad on Instagram at Brad Williams Comic. And of course, follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. This week for shows, I will be at the Soho House in Los Angeles, California, tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Wednesday, I'll be Comedy Juice Hollywood Improv, 10 p.m. Saturday, I'll be at the Westside Comedy Theater at 8 p.m. And then I am heading to Spokane, Washington to headline the Bing Theater on October 23rd. Get your tickets at bingtheater.com. October 23rd, 8 p.m., I'm headlining. I'm really pumped. Never done stand-up in Spokane before. Bring in the hilarious Kelsey Cook with me. So get your tickets. Come see us in Spokane at the Bing Theater. And, of course, October 20th, this is the big date. First, About Last Night, live podcast recording at the Hollywood Improv, which we're going to start doing hopefully very frequently. This is going to be a big show. The guest lineup is going to be insane. You need to get your tickets now because this, I guarantee, is going to sell out. We'll be doing a lot of press for this, and we're just going to pack it out because the guest lineup is going to be dope. And it's the first one at the Improv, and we're gonna make a habit of this. So get your tickets at improv.com. October 20th, 8 p.m. That's a Tuesday night, About Last Night podcast, live recording. Rest of my dates are on AdamRayTV.com. I update it every day. A lot of shows in L.A. coming up. I added a date in New York City at the Levity Live in West Nyack, December 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And then I'll be heading out to Hawaii after that shortly to do House Party Season 3 with my boy Adam Devine. Really pumped for that. Brad Williams, where's Brad going to be? Well, he'll be in Albany, New York, October 15th through the 18th at the Funny Bone in Albany, New York. Go see Brad. Get your tickets at funnybone.com. Albany, New York, Funny Bone, October 15th through the 18th. And then he'll be in Des Moines, Iowa, October 21st through the 24th at the Funny Bone in Des Moines, Iowa. And, of course, Brad's getting ready to shoot the Christopher Guest movie, Mascots, which is unbelievable. He unfortunately cannot go on the New Kids on the Block cruise with me because they added more days for him to shoot. And that's a good problem to have. I was obviously bummed. He was very bummed. He felt like he let me down. He felt like he was honestly like leaving me. Like we were married and he was having to tell me that he was leaving and taking the kids. But I'm going to go on the cruise anyway cuz I need a little vacay and Joe Mack is a good bud of mine and he wants me to perform a little out there and shit, man, it's a New Kids Cruise. It's one of those things that I feel like this is the time of my life to experience something like that when I can. And it seems like a very unique experience. And I'm going to go and hopefully come back with no STDs, but with a lot of stories. So that is the hope. Of course, get all your ALN merch at AstoyMerchandise.com. Brad sent me a lot of pictures of people wearing shirts from his shows the last few weeks. That's been fucking great. Get your mugs, your shirts at AstoyMerchandise.com, ESTOYMerchandise.com. We're approaching our 200th episode, which is crazy. 200 episodes of the About Last Night podcast. That is fucking mind-blowing. For that, we're going to be doing a best of episode. We're about five episodes away. We've got Howie Mandel coming up, Dana Carvey number two coming up, my boy Max Winkler, Henry Winkler's son, who I went to SC with, who's become a big Hollywood director. He's coming on the show, and a couple other great guests. And then, of course, we'll be getting Neil Patrick Harris in the fall. Some of our boys from SNL, Hasan Minhaj on The Daily Show. We're going to make a New York trip out of this one, get a lot of great guests for the podcast. But 200 episodes, man, we're going to do a best of the podcast and highlight some of the most fun moments from 200 episodes, from 3 years of doing this shit. So look out for that coming up soon. Subscribe to the podcast again on iTunes so you can get that easily when it pops up in your feed on your Android, your iPhone, Stitcher, wherever you listen to the podcast. AboutLastNightPodcast.com for all past episodes. Clooney Boop winners, your shit has been sent. You should be receiving it soon. Las Vegas Story winners, we've still got a couple more weeks for you guys to get those in, so send in your Vegas crazy stories to arayshugar@gmail.com. There's some fucking banana stories already, but we want to give you guys a few more weeks to send those in. So send your craziest Vegas stories to arayshugar@gmail.com. We'll pick a winner in the next few weeks. Today's episode is phenomenal. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. So now that we got the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles. That's the merch info. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the very funny, the one and only, Jeff Garland.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. A no podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
I didn't curse you, and he cursed himself. He's dead. But, you know, no, there's no curse. Curses are stupid.
Have you thrown out a pitch at Wrigley?
I have thrown out a pitch. It fell short.
Oh, no.
The crowd booed me. It was sold out.
Crowd
no.
booed you?
Yeah, and the thing is, I had a stroke in 2000. And so my right arm, it's strong enough, like I lift weights. It's strong enough to do everything daily.
Yeah.
Never does it feel weaker unless I throw a baseball. And I go, oh. But if I had warmed up. Or I didn't know until I got to the ballpark,
right.
And I didn't know that I shouldn't have until after I did it.
Yeah.
If I had time to warm up in like a few weeks to like, I would have been fine.
Right.
But no, it was cold. Cold on a weak arm.
Oh, that's not.
So I picked it up, and I had the catcher move in, and I threw it like a sissy. This next one, which ended up being actually the play of the day.
What?
On the Cubs broadcast. Yeah, they
that's almost better than an Emmy.
Yeah, it's better than an Emmy.
But I feel like there is pressure as a comedian, though, in those situations, right? Like people are expecting
to be funny.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing that every comedian should know when they do anything at Wrigley Field. Bill Murray's a Cub fan, mm-hmm. and the things that he's done, you cannot top it. He once threw the ball over the backstop, which was like a pop-up. But my favorite one that he ever did was where he threw it and then ran the bases. And he ran him hard and slid into third.
No.
It's like you can't top. I don't want to top Bill Murray.
Yeah.
I want to top Bill Murray, but that's never going to happen.
Yeah. Even if you think you are the guy that did it, who's going to be the first one to say you did it?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's almost that thing where it takes a little bit of the pressure off because you're like, but the top of the mountain is Bill Murray.
Yes,
so
yes.
That's all right. Like if the top of the mountain, if like Bieber did something, then you'd be like, okay, I could beat that. But then
no,
like,
if Bieber did something, what you say is, what? What did he do? Oh, okay. Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
Basically, he's to be ignored.
Yeah.
That's my point. Bill Murray, everything must be paid attention to, but not scrutinized.
Yeah.
And Justin Bieber, everything needs to be ignored, including his albums, including his work, and including his work with charities. I don't care. Everything with Justin Bieber is to be ignored.
Even if he does something good.
No matter what, like, he can never work his way back from where he is.
I feel like if Jeff Garland ran for any sort of political office, that would be your platform and your only platform.
No, you know what? Last election, I said I wanted to be a Republican candidate. Mm-hmm. So when, what's her name from Alaska?
Palin.
Yeah,
Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
After she spoke, everyone had their, you know, chance to speak. I go, what the fuck are you talking about? That's insane. And, you know, I'd keep on going at her.
Yeah.
And they would go, Mr. Garland, we're going to have to escort you out. And I go, I've finished what I came here to do.
Yeah.
I'm all good. I just want someone to just really, because everyone was, all the other Republicans are being really polite with her.
Sure.
So I wanted them to.
Enough of that.
Nail her. But the thing about Trump is, all you can really say to Trump is, because he's a horrible human being.
Yeah.
All you can just go is, your hair. Like if he like attacked, I'm doing a debate with him.
Yeah.
All I would ever say is, your hair. I wouldn't say anything more. I'd say it that lightly.
Lightly, right. And throw it away almost.
Throw it away.
So then he's like,
your hair. So like, duh, 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 because I'm not going to get into a shouting match with him.
No.
Because it's not a matter of winning. It's a matter of he'll always just have something
he
stupid.
He will shout louder.
Yeah, but with his hair, what has he got?
I would say, I watched the show Curb Your Enthusiasm. It was horrible. It was the worst show ever. I'm glad it's canceled. Nobody cares.
I've never seen anyone react more instantaneously to criticism than that man. And he's a liar.
Have you met him?
No. I was on. When I say he's a liar, he did this whole golf course in is it Scotland or Ireland?
Ireland.
Ireland.
Yes. The thing for the
Yes. There's a piece I saw on HBO about him trying. There was one guy holding out.
One farmer.
Yo, so you saw the same thing.
It's so great.
And then they built it. He won, and all the promises that he made
never
happened. Yeah. All of them.
It's gonna be the most luxurious golf course in the history.
Well, he says the greatest one ever, but they didn't employ the amount of people, all that stuff. You know,
he's not gonna win.
He's not gonna win.
Yeah.
But you know, the Republican Party, you know, it's been criticized for being screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
If this isn't proof of it, because truly, if he was running on the Democratic side, he'd never get the nomination.
No.
Hillary's going to get the nomination and win. And the best thing that she's doing is staying out of the fray.
Well, yeah.
She's not getting involved.
Well,
it was weird that she did a selfie with, what's her name? Who also has met Kanye's wife.
Kardashian. Yeah.
That was a weird one. But,
in
general, I'm not going to hold that against her. Because how do I know?
That's Let me just tell you something.
There's a knock at the door. Mm. I'm going
to
be honest with you. Let's just be totally honest. Me and my irreverent, the highest level of irreverence I could have.
Right.
She's there. She tells me she's lost. She goes, Jeff Garland, I'm a big fan of yours. Will you take a picture with me?
Yeah. I'm too proud.
Yeah, I'm too proud. You're wrong. But, you know, so it's like she's a human being.
Totally.
And by the way, I'd take a selfie with Donald Trump. I would. Because you know why? I'd get tons of press.
Yeah.
People would go, what are you doing?
Garland and then
I would actually cause him damage because I would say, no way would I vote for him.
Yeah.
No way. I think he stinks. But he wanted to take a picture with me. What am I going to do? He was on Conan once when I was on Conan. And he was not friendly, so that tells
Jesus.
You.
Is that an immediate kind of X for you if somebody just isn't a nice person?
Almost. By the way, I understand people having bad days.
Totally.
I way get it.
Because you've probably had run-ins with people where they've met, you know, I hear this story a lot from people who have, like, tiny encounters where they'd be like, I met Julia Roberts at the airport, and she was a total bitch. You're like, really, what happened? Well, she was running to her flight, and I screamed at her, I'm a big fan. She didn't even turn around. Well, she did turn around, but then she said, sorry, I'm late. And I was like, I was holding my phone up for a picture. She wouldn't even look for a quick picture.
Are you improvising this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did this happen to you?
It's a very unrealistic story.
I've heard stories like that.
No, but she would not turn and say, sorry, I'm late. She would have just kept going. Because you know what? That's what I would have done.
Yeah.
Or I would have yelled, thank you, and kept going.
Yeah.
Who needs the exchange? It was a bad improv. It was, well, I shouldn't say bad. It was mediocre because it wasn't based in reality. You did include an airport and you include an actual person.
I'll tell you why it's based in reality. My first time on a set out here, my buddy to help me get my SAG card, did me a 3-day extra thing to get my vouchers.
And it was a movie with her?
No, it was in the extra holding, but I listened to so many crazy stories from people who've been doing the extra work for years.
Right, who have bitterness stories.
Yes,
and,
sure.
And by the way, a lot of people become extras, truthfully, because they think they're going to get become
discovered.
Or they do it enough that they have their SAG card, and that's the only thing standing between them and getting a better part is not having a SAG card. It is just people are idiots.
You're so glad to be on the other side of it, huh?
Well, yes, because that's what I aspired
to. Were you ever...
Not because I want to separate myself from... although I don't really usually hang out with extras. I'm very friendly to them. They're nice people.
Yeah, sure. How many... You guys have a decent amount of extras on Curb, right?
Curb, yes.
Yeah.
Goldberg's not so much.
As a matter of fact, Curb is the one show where if you're an extra, you do have a mediocre chance of being upgraded.
Well, because it's...
Which is usually it's impossible to be upgraded. But on our show... If you're an extra, and sometimes we'll have to meet like five extras. We pull them aside and just talk to them. And we say, okay, her. Because there's a situation where we hadn't counted on where it looks weird if the person's, you know, like you watch a show.
Yeah.
If someone's clearly an extra, they can't talk.
Right.
And you think they should say something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On Curb Your Enthusiasm, I bet you we upgraded over 7 years. A dozen extras easy,
wow.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
That's huge.
That's huge.
That never happens. Your job is to be in the background and not be noticed.
But because we wanted it to be real.
Right.
It's like on Curb Your Enthusiasm, one thing Larry and I are always proud of, if someone says something funny that's meant to be funny, the other person laughs.
Yeah.
Unlike, you know, on a normal sitcom, if someone says something clever, it's for the audience to laugh.
Right.
The other person obviously didn't hear it. I think listening skills are what's wrong with your usual comedy, you know.
Well, sure, because they're saying that's going to get in the way of the audience's experience, but it's just no, it's going to enhance it because
enhance it. But that just it's a hackneyed way of thinking.
Was that a true sign of if something was going to stay in? Because I mean, I've heard you say in other interviews too, and just from my countless Curb. Fascination. And I went to the thing at Largo when you interviewed Larry.
Oh, that's the very first one of my podcasts when I was doing my podcast.
That was maybe one of the greatest nights of it was fucking.
By the way, how hard were he and I laughing?
So hard. And that's what was so great for.
By the way, for people watching that night, or if you've listened to it, it's still available
on
iTunes and Earwolf and SoundCloud and all that.
What's the podcast called?
That one's still up. I've taken a lot of them down. I left that one up. And
so it was a special night because it felt from as an audience member.
What was cool about that was. That's essentially what it's like, Larry and I, on the set.
Seemed like it.
We talk like that. We make sure I make discoveries like he's never used a jukebox.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Well, the other one was that he's never taken a picture with a camera.
Yeah.
That blew my mind.
And he was so cash about it.
I can't believe that. But that'll happen to us on the set. Mm. I literally, when we're making Curb Your Enthusiasm, laugh from morning until night. All day. And we're taking our work seriously.
Yeah.
But you laugh because it's just, you're having fun. It's funny. And it lends itself to
that. And then how much of the stuff when you, how much do you laugh during taping versus off taping?
Zero during taping.
So it's all off.
I should say zero. I laugh. Larry loses his, he loses control quite often. I almost never.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I have.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know.
And the thing that I love about that whole show, I mean, so many things, but it seems like you watch that and you think, oh, no one can be like that. No one could be like Larry was in that show.
Right.
And then you see him in a casual interview, you're like, oh, wait, no, that's him. That's him.
It is, but it isn't. It's him.
With the volume
show,
turned up? Or?
No, with the id ruling.
Mm, okay.
You know, in real life you turn down the id.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although I think since the show he's turned up his id because he sees he can get away with it. But in general, that's what it is. It's like, oh, I'm thinking this. Well, let me talk about it and let me do it in the show where I wouldn't do it in real life.
Like, would he, an example, like in the show when he like bumped into Michael J. Fox in the last season and then was like, was that the Parkinson's? You know, like something like that. Would he do that in real life?
Yes. Excuse my voice for cracking. Yes, but it would take hours of him thinking about doing it first.
For sure.
Like, he wouldn't just do it.
Right.
He is a Parkinson's. But he would have called me and go, you think I should ask him about the part? You know what I mean?
Right. Like, it
would,
okay, yeah.
So
he's very curious.
It's possible. I'm not saying he would.
Yeah.
It's possible. But in general, like on the show, he just does it. You know, and if someone's irritating him, it's just. But I've become more that way.
Yeah.
I'm very, you know, throw it out there type thing.
Was it really every? I mean, how much of a base script would you guys even go in with before?
Oh no, there's a. See, that's the thing that I always want to make clear.
Yeah,
there's a solid 7-page outline story,
right?
Scene by scene,
heavily beat it out.
Not beat it out. Paragraphs. The story.
Okay.
No beats. Beats are nowhere near. So it's not like a beat sheet. It's really the story of the show. Mm-hmm. And then we fill in the dialogue, what have you. But it's really well written and thought out.
Yeah, because you got to, I mean, I just got a part in this new Christopher Guest movie coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me a script. And I thought it was like an all improvised movie. But you see it and you're like, oh, wait, no.
He writes a full script and then includes improv.
Yes. And
well, that's great, by the way. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What are you playing again?
I play a guy in a worm costume, so life is going good.
What if I told you? That's fantastic. You know, if you're in a worm costume...
With Fred Willard in the scene.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, Fred Willard, who's my pal. And
star of Dealing with Idiots.
Dealing with Idiots. I was in WALL-E with him.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. He's one of the great ones. Oh, you're working with Fred Willard.
What should Brad...
Done.
Yeah,
good night, nurse, as you say.
Good night, nurse. Big time. That's great.
Now, you've obviously improv with Fred before. Do you have any tips? Any things that I should be aware of?
No. If you're a nice guy and you're good, you're fine.
Great.
If you know, he's just such a nice man that I think even if you're bad and you're a bad guy, he'd still be nice.
Yeah,
he's so kind and so funny. Mm-hmm. There's a line he said in this movie I made called Dealing with Idiots.
Such a great film.
What? Thank you, man.
Yeah,
they were talking about there's too many wheelchair, you know, handicapped spaces.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, this is like Little League Baseball. And he says, well, how can we encourage more handicapped people to come to the games?
Yeah.
That was his
thing. An improv?
That was completely improvised.
And then he said, what did he say who was the actress who was asking everybody to, like, she immediately asked you to
give
donate
money.
Some because your kid's eating a lot of the food.
What's
the actress's name?
Jamie Gertz.
Yeah. And Fred's like, my attorney's advised me not to say anything right now.
Yeah.
He's like, but go ahead and put me down for whatever you think's good and put a little star next to it just to make it seem like I was in favor of doing this or whatever. Yeah.
No, he's tremendous.
When did you meet Fred? Was that back in Chicago? Second City days?
I don't remember,
okay.
But it was a great moment. No, you know where I met Fred was doing a talk show one time.
Cool.
And then doing another talk show. And we've been on talk shows together a few times. No, I love the guy. I can't. He's one of my heroes.
That movie, as I raved to you in the hallway of the Comedy Store, which we'll segue into because that also has a special reason for why we're here. Was so movies like that that I mean I first of all couldn't tell that it was improvised because it seemed so.
Which movie?
Dealing with Idiots.
Oh, Dealing with Idiots. Uh huh.
I've watched it 4 times already.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Wow.
I showed it to my mom when she came down to visit and helped me move into my new apartment.
My favorite scene in that movie.
The Odenkirk scene.
Odenkirk scene.
Yeah.
In the print shop.
It's maybe one of the greatest monologues, and I'll go on record saying this in movie history.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And then
ridiculous.
When you told me that he improvised, what was the thing that
the goulash?
Yeah.
I put the can of goulash. In between, there was a store, like a little old lady owned this little grocery store, and I bought goulash. She had goulash on the counter. I bought it. So I went over.
Who sells goulash anymore, by the way?
Can you get me?
Smart person.
Thank you.
An intelligent person.
So I just asked for water.
Yeah.
If people are listening and they're like, get me what? Do you guys want water?
Yes, please.
Yes, please. Thank you.
And three waters. Make them fresh and delicious.
And if there's any goulash laying around.
But anyway, I go and I put it on the counter. We're in like a print shop.
Yeah.
And I go, care what you do, use this. Mm-hmm. But other than Bob's one of my oldest and best friends. And I knew that he would do something. He goes, okay. Mm-hmm. There was no like most people go, what do I do with that? Like he didn't have that thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just rattles off a hilarious model.
How often would you, I mean, that's so many layers to what he began to speak about in that scene.
Yeah, oh, it's unbelievable. And it's all based on me just saying.
How hard was that not to laugh, though? I mean, because you're.
Truth is, it's just, you just do it. You just get in the
scene.
Do
you lock in when you feel someone in the zone?
But I did, when I was playing this guy, a comedian, it was similar to me. The way you do it is, like, he just does what he does, and you're there. But the only thing I had to remember was who I was, why I was there. And so I'm listening, but you have to remember that what I'm doing as a director, observing this, is the same thing I'm doing as the actor,
yeah.
Which is I have to hold in my laughter as the director to not disturb things. Mm-hmm. And in character, because I want this guy to continue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If I laugh at him, he'll say, "Why are you laughing at me?" So it sort of ruins it if I do.
Yeah,
cuts it off.
So, and you, by the way, the shots of me in that scene, I don't know how many two shots there were, but the singles of me, because I used two cameras at all times, was literally while he was telling the story. So it's not me cheating, which you can do,
sure.
Where you just shoot me standing there, dump sort of like blank face with no one talking.
Right.
But no, it was done at the same time.
Well, because you want to get the authentic reaction.
Well, you do, yeah.
Whatever
and
that
so,
is.
Well, there's that subtext of me watching, and the audience is thinking he wants to die laughing now. He thinks he's nuts. The name of the movie is Dealing with Idiots.
Yeah.
It's about my character dealing with idiots.
Yeah. Is the amount of improv in that movie and how much you know you guys do in Curb and also like in your stand-up? Like,
I improvise from an outline, yeah.
Right? Every time. And you've always done that.
It's insane.
I don't know, sometimes I don't even have an outline. I just say, what should I talk about?
Sometimes you just grill a comedian about asking you to do his podcast.
Well, I've done that. Oh, I did that
Thank
from the
you so
stage
much,
one
Kevin.
Night, didn't I?
Yeah. So let me, I want to briefly just preface for our audience that I think this is might be over a year and a half in the making.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is fine because it takes time. You're very busy. And also it's just, you know.
Trying to find the time when
it takes time to find, yeah. And But your very sweet wife, Marla, who I've known for a while from auditions, I think I asked her when we were all at a Paul Feig party. And she was like, and I was like, do you think? And she was like, yeah, you join me to, you know, ask now. I was like, no, I don't want to do it now at the party. I don't want to like burden him with that. I'd rather have some conversation about something fun and not business related. And then I was like, I'll send you an email. Maybe you can pass that along to him and get at least the conversation rolling. And then that started. And then we started an email exchange. And then it was locking in some dates. And then we had to shift some things. And then I brought you up at the Comedy Store one night. And this is now after. And, you know, I'm very persistent because there's a balance definitely that you have to figure out between being annoying and being
This is why I don't do my podcast anymore.
Why?
Because it's hard.
You were bugging your friends?
I was bugging people I know. I was too. It's a pain in the ass.
It is a pain in the ass.
And then I thought about having a booker, but then I thought, I don't want to deal with a booker.
It's because you have relationships
personal.
With them.
Yeah. And so
personal.
Everyone who did my show was somebody I respected and know, you know, and if not friends with, and so
they all probably had no problem or didn't even think twice about saying yes, though, right?
But nobody jumps into a podcast. You know, if you have a talk show on NBC, people are more apt to go, yeah, no.
Yeah.
But
maybe
podcast,
I should have said it was Katie Couric from the get-go.
A podcast is like saying, hey, will you drive your car, but through a bumpy road and a forest.
And then drop me off at the airport.
And then drop me off at the airport. No, don't. It's not that far, but it's almost like it's very like, yeah, I guess I'd ride on a bumpy road and a forest. Whose car is this
Is he
now?
Talking about our podcast, Where, Brad? I can't tell.
No, but you know what I'm saying? It's, so that's what I always, like I remember I met Lily Tomlin. Here's the thing that was happening too. I'd meet people who I adore and look up to, like Lily Tomlin.
Yeah.
And she was so nice. And she knew who I was, and I fucking asked her to do my podcast. It's uncomfortable. She says, yes, I'll definitely do it. Da-da. But then once I started contacting her and stuff, it became awkward.
Yeah.
Right. Because
she was very nice.
Yeah.
And she said no in the nicest way after a few exchanges. Like, she said no because of a reason, but she didn't leave the door open. Like, ask me again, or I'm sorry.
Like you did for us. You said, not right now, maybe this time.
Right, because, by the way, I will and have said, I especially, I mean, this past few years especially, no comes very easy to me.
Yeah.
No, it really does. I say no to interviews and, like the newspaper, magazine. TV talk shows.
All the time,
I just turned down a big national one recently because I didn't want to do it. I didn't like the circumstances.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's almost a relieving point in your career because when you start off, you have to say yes to everything because you're not on it.
You really well. The reason that you have to say yes that no one really knows is just to have the experience.
Yeah.
Because when you're experienced, that's everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's everything.
Because then you know how to navigate through some of the.
But it's like you have to do a dozen bad sitcoms before you can go, all right, and none of that anymore. And I'm not talking about being a regular on a dozen bad sitcoms, but I'm like guesting. You have to say yes to all these things. So that way, down the road, you've been on the set, you know what it's like, you know how certain directors are, you know the way it works.
Yeah.
And it's like going to class. Like, this is going to class.
Yeah.
And no one's going to hold it against you when you do a shitty sitcom and you're 24 years old.
No, because you would need
to. I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio was on...
Growing Pains.
Growing Pains.
Yeah.
Come on. If you're going to hold something against somebody...
Shots fired, Leo.
Yeah, no, but no.
Of course.
Shots fired. You were making a joke. And I at that point, I did something rare, which is taking myself seriously. See, when you get me pontificating, it becomes dangerous.
Well, let me just say, so at the store that night then, I think we'd had maybe about probably 15 to 16 email exchanges and 4 or 5 dates that were locked in and then changed. And then I bring you up, and when I hear that it was you, I was like, part of me got nervous because I was like, I hadn't seen you since... You said check in. I remember talking with Brad about this. He said check in a couple months. And then I checked in, and then 2 weeks had gone by, and I hadn't heard anything. So in my head, I was like, and in my head also, I had thought, all right, you know what? Enough is enough. Like, Dayenu, you know? And I just.
Wave the white garland flag.
Yeah, and I was just like, you know what? And then I brought you up. So then I was like, okay, well, this is going to be. At least maybe I can look him in the eye one last time and be like, sorry for bugging the shit out of you, man. And then you get up there and you go, Adam Ray has a podcast. And then you went into this 5-minute rant about how you go.
I think it was even longer than
that. It might have been longer. You go, does anybody listen to Adam Ray's podcast? And a handful of people clap. And you go, that's what I thought. And you go, I'll do it someday. He's been bugging me for maybe about 2 years. And you go, every day. He goes, I'll probably do it. He goes, maybe I won't. He goes, was Adam funny? People kind of clap. And then you go, yeah, he might make it. I should do it. He probably won't, but you know, there's this great laugh.
Yeah,
then you go, it's tough to make it. You go, he's good looking. He does, you know, he'll be fine. He goes, I have to be funny to, you know.
Well, you know, the thing is, that's how you improvise, by the way. You just say what pops in your head. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm editing. So I am literally thinking. I'm literally thinking, not trying as a joke.
Right.
Is he going to make it someday? I don't know. Maybe he can. Yeah. He's got his good-looking kid. And then
and that was getting laughs.
And even the thing, the one thing I probably did say as a joke that I should do it because you might be famous. What do I give a shit?
Yeah.
I'm happy to be with you guys.
Yeah.
You know. And it's like. You can't have. It's like being nice to assistants because they might be somebody someday. That's bullshit. Just be nice to assistants.
Just be nice to them. Yeah.
Just be nice because that's what you do.
That's what you do.
You just be a good person.
Lo and behold, the number of people say, oh, "I'm always nice to assistants." You just never know. Well, now I know with you.
Yeah.
You need to be motivated to be nice.
Yeah.
Piece of shit.
But I mean, I've always respected the fact that you go on stage and you do. What many people believe to be one of the hardest things in the world, and you just completely improvise
with no script.
Yeah.
I saw you perform. It was at Bob Saget's scleroderma.
I saw you there.
Yeah,
with a really beautiful girl.
Oh
thank
yeah,
you. Thank
is
you,
that
sir.
Your girlfriend?
Yes.
Look at you in your bikini. How about that? And that was a non sequitur, by the way. It's not referring to you or her in a bikini.
Thank you.
But she was beautiful, man.
Thank you. And and in that room, in that room was heads of studios, Jimmy Kimmel,
Don Rickles.
Don Rickles is in the room, and all these people in the industry.
Stamos.
Yes, Stamos, and you're going on after Jim Gaffigan, who just killed like just every line gets a line. And you're like, I'm just gonna improvise it, and just the stones that takes, like knowing that John Mayer's going on. Right after.
Would you do me a favor and please mention to your listeners that I did great?
Yes.
No, I know.
And
you're talking about the guts it took. But please,
talk about the finished product, man.
Please mention that I did great.
Jim Gaffigan kills before you. Yeah. John Mayer kills after
Stamos
you.
Is there.
Stamos.
He saw it.
Yes.
Yeah, I was grandfathered.
No, but you did well that night. And
Jack Black texted me during that.
No
told me
way.
Told me how great I am because he was leaving and he knew that he wouldn't see me.
That's phenomenal. Well,
he's the sweetest guy in the world.
Is
but,
he?
Yeah.
We met him actually. We did the Kevin and Bean April Foolishness show this past year at the Shrine.
And he was there?
And we were all on the show together. And him and Kyle, and you know, they were just the sweetest guys ever. Have you known him for a while as well?
Who?
Jack Black.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Years and years and years and years. He's one of my favorite people. I do a benefit show with him at Largo every year.
Awesome.
With Tenacious D, with Kyle and he.
The best.
Christmas time.
You knew them before they were Tenacious D?
I knew them. Well, the first time I saw Jack, he was on screen in I forgot the name of the movie. It was about a political guy, and Jack played a crazy guy who followed him. And then I was like, who the hell is this guy? But Jack and I, it was me and I can tell you this. I was just telling somebody the story the other night.
Yeah.
We performed together many times on the same, he and I, and me and Tenacious D,
yeah,
on a bill in front of 10 people. And Jack and I reminisce about it all the time. It's just nuts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that, you know, so no one knew who the hell we were.
That's so correct. There must be so many. I mean, you hear when people come up in classes of
right, yeah,
that there's probably a handful, yeah, of.
And I bet you were nice to Jack Black because you never know. He could have been someone successful.
I was very nice to Jack. I love
God
Jack.
That one paid off.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't help but, you know. Yeah, you know. Look, I'm not saying I'm always nice. You know, people who are assholes really think they're not assholes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they think that they're great and they're, you know. So I just want to be humble with my humbleness.
I did hear a story about you one time where you said you went to a movie theater and you watched a movie for about 5 minutes and then stood up in the middle of the theater and just went, nope! And then just walked out of the theater. I told that on the Kevin and Bean show.
Oh, yes, I did do that. I don't remember what movie it was.
Film.
I walk out of movies all the time.
Do you really?
Oh, my God.
Let's talk about this, because I've walked out of a couple in my day.
Well, here's the way, I can't do it anymore because of who I am.
Sure.
Right.
Here's what I mean by that.
Yeah.
When no one knew who I was, I'd watch 10 minutes of a movie. It was terrible. All you got to do is ask for the manager, say you're sick, and they give you a pass to come back for another movie any other time. Because my attitude has always been, and it's now when I even can't get the pass, you got my money, yep, you ain't going to get my time.
Huh.
Hey, there, you won. You don't care about my money.
Yeah.
You don't care whether I dig the movie.
No.
No. I mean,
so
the
you got what
box
you wanted.
Office numbers. Yeah, the box office numbers don't say it made $17 million and 100,000 people walked out.
Yeah. Like, no, by the way, that. Yeah, that's hysterical. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I just took my twin 6-year-old nieces in Seattle to Annie the Musical because I was like, I want to get them started.
Oh,
like,
Annie the movie thing?
Yeah, no, the musical.
Oh, live, you mean?
Yeah. The Broadway, it was at the Paramount Theater in Seattle. Uh-huh. And they hadn't seen a big musical yet. And they had just seen the new Annie. Uh-huh. And their first critique was, we like Brown Annie better. And then they got tired. And in intermission, they're both laying down on me. And one of them goes, the singing's making me sleepy. And I was like, you know what? That's a fair and honest critique because it is a little slow. And
so it wasn't a good production.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm a big fan of musicals, and I was hopefully trying to instill that.
Who doesn't love a good Brown Annie?
I mean,
Brown Annie.
I mean, that sounds like something
unbelievable.
You order off a menu, like, oh, I'll take a Brown Annie.
Well, but wait, a Brown Annie would be like, you know, like peach cobbler with chocolate ice cream. Right? Doesn't that sound like that's what it would be?
Only at Marie Callender's.
Brown Annie.
Oh, my God. For lunch, I had a Reuben, and then they have the best Brown Annie.
My sister-in-law makes this apple dessert,
yeah, mm-hmm,
and it's just some sort of apple dessert. There's no specific, but I make everybody refer to it as Apple Brown Betty. So I'll have them, when my sister-in-law is serving, I'll have my kids, I go, Tyler, you want a piece of Apple Brown Betty? And they'll do it, just because I love apple, you know, yeah, saying Apple Brown Betty, which is a
rolls
weird
off the tongue.
But yeah, that's the same thing as a Brown Annie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a pair of peach cobbler with chocolate ice cream.
Maybe a couple graham crackers stuck in the middle.
Yeah. It does sound like a dessert. That's funny as shit.
I would love it if they announced it made $28 million and then
how many people walked out
of the movie.
Oh, but I love when they'll say, here's why the movie didn't work. And you go, did anyone take into account that it's a shitty movie?
Yeah.
With people you don't want to see?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
And you know what? And you're right. When you say you got my money, you're not getting my time. Because we only have so much of that. So
right.
why?
That's why I say no to podcasts.
Sure.
Yes. I know I said that, mm-hmm. but I'm really enjoying myself.
Thank you so much.
All right, you guys are excellent.
Thank you. This is a big deal. I mean, you know what? Also, too, is like
big deal. You just interviewed Howie Mandel. How is that a big? I'm a big deal.
Jeff, you're a big deal. And Curb is my favorite show of all time in planet Earth.
Thank you. When you're on Mars, what do you dig? No one ever had planet Earth.
Designing women.
Huge on Mars. Hasselhoff, huge in Germany. Huge. Mars is the designing the first, women. Though. Yes, yeah. Yes,
they absolutely love it. I mean, they
designing just, women. Just the idea that show existed.
So, if you were in a movie theater and they started off with an episode of Designing Women, would that be a similar situation where you would just be nope?
I'll tell you what happened last night. I went to see AC/DC.
Holy shit! Dodger Stadium.
Dodger Stadium. Favorite band of all time. Love them.
And by the way, never not great. I'm just letting you know that. On album, well, they've had some albums that were okay, but the majority of their work, pure, simple, straight-ahead power chords, fantastic.
I hate people that critique them like, well, all the songs sound the same. Like, baloney. And all the sounds fucking rule. Like, they're great.
Did they bring it?
Oh, they were fantastic.
Yeah.
But they had an opening band.
They're awesome.
They had an opening band. I don't like slamming. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say their name. You can research it. If someone wants to take the time to go, who opened for AC/DC? But they were a bit pretentious, mm-hmm. and I didn't think they had good songs, and they played for 45 minutes at an AC/DC volume because it was set for that. And so by the time I forgot to bring my earplugs, so I could only handle, even though I love them, about an hour of AC/DC. I had to leave a good half hour, 45 minutes early. Well, my ears were hurting.
Yeah.
They were great.
Did you at least see a whole lot of Rosie? Were they?
I left before Whole Lotta Rosie. That was like, I saw The Running Order. That was like two or three songs. But I stayed.
So you left about seventh inning stretch time, pretty much.
I would actually say even sixth inning.
Yeah.
There was no stretching. but it was, I love AC/DC. And
are you a big live concert guy in general?
No, because people are idiots.
Yeah.
Here's why. Good. For example, as much as my ears were ringing, the woman standing and dancing in front of me, cigarette the whole time, swinging it around. And you don't want to be like, can you please put that out?
You know, I don't want to be that guy.
Here's the thing. Yes, I have every right to say that to her. On the flip side,
she'll be dead in 5 years.
It's just like that. I don't want to have that conversation.
Yeah. Sure. It's
I'm in the bath. I'm running to the bathroom right before the show. Show's about to start. Mm-hmm. And some guy literally is walking out of the bathroom and he says these words. AC/DC's about to go on. Don't have time to wash my hands. That's rock and roll, people. I didn't know that rock and roll was actually bad hygiene.
Apparently.
And he was a really fat, disgusting man. I don't know who he was touching or what hands he was shaking, but it was nauseating.
Why did he have to announce it?
And all I thought to myself was, I'm a gentleman of the world. I think I'm retiring from outdoor concerts. I think I saw the
you don't know how many pee handshakes you're involving yourself with.
By the way, I really don't, because people shake my hand
a lot. You got to go with the fist bump, like Howie and Harlan Williams. They go with the bump.
Well, Howie, I thought he bumps.
He bumps. Yeah.
Oh, I don't bump. I shake hands.
Yeah, it's a strong move.
And I'm a big hand washer. Whenever I have an opportunity, I wash my hands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
So apparently, to be rock and roll is to have horrible hygiene.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing deodorant because Third Eye Blind's about to take the stage. Rock and roll.
Yeah. Third Eye Blind. But by the way, I'm sure there's big fans of Third Eye Blind.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, I love
AC/DC. My first concert.
I actually, AC/DC, mm-hmm. I used to be a security guard at rock concerts when I was a teenager in early 20s at the Hollywood Sportatorium in Hollywood, Florida.
Okay.
That's where you grew up, yeah?
Yeah. After Chicago, then Florida, and then back to Chicago.
Gotcha.
And I worked security. I mean, I was in the barricade, the front of the stage. That's where you always want to be. That was the best spot.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And I was in the barricade, and AC/DC's Back in Black tour.
Oh, God.
Yes.
So that's prime.
So that was like, wow. I mean, I would have loved to have seen Angus. I mean, not Angus Young. What's his name? Who died of drugs?
Not Brian Johnson.
Bon Scott.
Yeah.
Bon Scott. I would have loved to see him because, you know, they don't do It's a Long Way to the Top if you want to rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Brian Johnson won't do that in reference to. Yeah. And that's that's my favorite AC/DC song with the bagpipes. I got goosebumps. I love that song. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, no kidding around. You know, Brian Johnson back then, so that we're talking about, okay, 30 years ago. So he was, well, fuck, he was 38 years old.
Yeah.
Wow. He's 68. So that was around, was that 30 years ago? Yeah, because I'm 53. No, I was a little younger. He was actually younger than that. It was probably like 34 years ago. So he's like 34 years old. So he's much more energetic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's slapping people five songs. He ran his hand across my face, mm-hmm. slapped me and scratched me. And I had like blood.
Get out.
And he looked at me and then he like rubbed my head like, you're a good lad. I actually met him.
That's rock and roll.
And then the last time AC/DC came, I got tickets through a friend of Brian Johnson, okay? A famous friend, an actor. So after the show, I'm in the hallway and he introduced, he said, are you the funny guy? That's the way he talks. Are you the funny guy?
Yeah.
But whatever, I go, how would you know? And he goes, I had a feeling you're the funny guy. And then he proceeded to make like the goofiest faces at me, like that's comedy. He goes, Malcolm says you're a funny, funny guy. It's Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, okay.
Malcolm says you're a funny, funny guy. I hope you like the show. I did. All right, good.
He's one of those guys where you think like, oh man, he must be straining his throat like crazy to sing that way. And then like you said, you hear him talking like,
wow,
oh, Jeff Garlin, nice. And by the way,
and his voice is like exact singing voice the same.
It's the same thing.
But he was such a kind gentleman. He was a good man, and that was really, that was neat, you know. And
being a security guard, that's probably another reason why you're kind of like, maybe not concerts so much, because you've seen the worst of the worst.
I saw Queen. Queen was my first one in 77.
Oh, God.
And I've seen everybody. The only band that I never saw that I would have loved to have seen is Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
They're the only one. Yeah. And they were still doing their last tour. Their last tour was within my, I coulda. I didn't, wasn't working then. Mm-hmm. Because In Through the Outdoor came out, you know, when I was a senior. So earlier on, there was, you know, some Led Zeppelin action. But other than that, I've seen pretty much everybody.
Jesus.
How many people tried to fight you? Like,
lots of people. Yeah, you know.
Just like every night.
Because people trying
to
get
I've gotten some fights, you know. And I had my big black flashlight, the mag light.
Yeah.
The one that's like a baseball bat, hanging from the side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because people were trying to crawl up on the stage.
Or different things. Tom Petty, I remember Tom Petty I did security for. This is 100 years ago. And my job was to stand on the side of the stage. Mm-hmm. And when girls got onto the stage, to run and grab them and pull them off the stage.
And that was your exact job.
Like, that was my job. And it happened three times during the show. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. But I stood there. I mean, and now where I'm at, I've been backstage, in front of the stage. I've been everywhere. So for me right now, as a man who doesn't, and I say a man, I mean, you know, my kids go to lots of concerts. And like, I get asked, do you want to go to Coachella? I'm like, you can pay me. I just did my first rock concert in terms of performing. They had a comedy room or thing. It was not Bonnaroo, Rue. What was it? Caboo.
Oh, in San Diego.
Avenue. At Delmar.
Yet Avenue.
And I said that this is my first and last. I'm retiring on this.
No. Wait, but didn't you, my good buddy Matt Edgar.
Matt opened for me.
When you guys did Guster, right?
Like, yeah, we went on tour with Guster.
One of my favorite bands.
Oh, they're great. It was Guster and Garland. As a matter of fact, when we performed at Caboo, he wore a Guster and Garland t-shirt.
So
that was cool. Made me very happy.
So cool.
Now,
did, what would
By the way, I want your listeners to know, they don't know me.
Yeah.
My point about all this whole concert thing, I've been there, done that. I'm not impressed with myself, and I've not lost my lust for life. Like, I still love music. In an ideal world, I would watch you know, Bruce Springsteen, and the people around me would act like civilized people and be thoughtful and respectful of others and stand up when necessary and sit when necessary.
Yeah, sure.
But that's not how it is.
No,
never.
So when I say I'm done, I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no more.
You know what? I totally get it, because it's the same reason why when shows are like, I like to be very private as much as I can at shows, because I know as a tiny guy, people get drunk at concerts and then they just kind of look around going, oh, I bet we could throw him.
Yeah.
Have you been thrown?
Oh, it's happened. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Shut your grandma's balls. Yeah. Wait, hold on a second.
No, keep them open. I want to hear the story.
Someone will look at you and say, I bet we could throw him.
Yeah. I was at a show for a band called Pennywise. Uh-huh. And some guys just saw me and was like, it'd be fun to throw him.
By the way, in my opinion, and I'm being totally serious, that's assault.
It is? It absolutely is.
Out and out assault.
So
that is so wrong.
He's been beaten.
And so hurtful. You understand, I hear I hear stories that break your heart.
Yeah.
That really devastates me.
Yeah,
I'm not recovering from this. You think that I won't be driving in my car. Yes, it's a Tesla. You think I won't be driving in my car thinking to myself about
what could I have done? Why wasn't I there?
Well, no, I wish I was.
That's a Jewish guilt.
Because a fight would have broke out. I would have went, get the fuck away from me. And I would have turned to you, stand on my chair and watch the show.
Yeah.
And I would just get involved with the thing. That is so dispiriting and wrong.
And you would have helped him in that fight, because you would have been like, someday guy would be somebody.
No. No. What I would have done was I would have cleared him out.
Yeah.
Right.
And then done the fighting. I wouldn't have included him in the fight. I would have left him. He would have been.
Now, what would you do? And this is a real question. And Brad, I know you can speak to this because you probably have been a part of these groups.
Sure.
If let's say 5 to 10 dwarves rush the stage, a la Tom Petty style with those girls, what would be your plan of action?
First off, 5 to 10 people don't rush the stage as a group. What are they trying to accomplish? They want to tackle him? Like I'm saying, 5 to 10?
What if these dwarves had an agenda? They want to kidnap
Petty.
They
would be the weirdest group of dwarves. Here's my honest opinion. What my agenda
would
be?
You say? We don't like Petty?
First off, I love to use the word dwarves. What should I use?
Dwarf, little person.
Little person?
Well, because to me...
Little person's stupid, too.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I'm one of the weird
guys.
You're
just a guy.
Yeah. I'm one of the weird guys where I actually don't mind the word midget.
How about this? Little guy. He's a little guy.
There you go.
Yeah, he's a little guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. If 4 or 5 little guys wrestle.
That's not a position where there's a lot of names that have dignity with that, you know?
It really
get called America's Top Coxman. When people see me, they go, America's Top Coxman. And, you know, I have trouble with that. I think that's a little insulting.
It's like, hey, everyone has their cross to bear.
I'm definitely more than just a big cock. And I like to say that to people, and it's funny because I say the same thing.
Coxman means you know how to use it.
Yeah.
Okay. I made that. I mean, I have heard that term before, and I have no idea what it really means. But anyhow, here's what I would do. Here's my agenda.
Yeah.
If 10 little guys and gals were running, I think it's a gal.
Co-ed concert.
Not a little girl.
No.
Little gal.
Yep. Yeah.
And little guys and gals ran the stage, I'd move and probably leave the arena, because that would be so weird that something...
You don't want to be around for the aftermath.
I don't want to be around for the aftermath. I want to get the fuck out of there. And I'd leave. I'd quit my job. I don't care. Because that's insane.
What does it mean?
By the way, 10 people rushing like that who are giants.
Yeah.
I'm running the other way.
You're right.
It doesn't matter what size.
Doesn't matter then.
Normal. Everyone 5'10". I'm leaving.
See ya. Good night, nurse. Yeah.
That makes a ton of sense, because that night when the two guys did pick me up and throw me, right after that happened, a bunch of people left the arena because they thought, like, well, you know what? Whatever Pennywise does on stage is not going to be better than a dwarf flying through the air.
Seriously?
It's peaked. So we're
out. What does that feel like? Is that horrifying?
Yeah, because I'm like, I don't know
where I'm going to land.
Have you ever, like, did they miss somebody or anything?
Well, thankfully, they threw me, like, on top of a group, and then I immediately started crowd surfing. So
at that point, you sort of went, all right, I'm going to go with it. What can I do?
Yeah.
You're a good egg. That's what I'm going to call little people from now on.
Eggs.
Good egg. He's a good egg.
Do you know Michael McDonald from Mad TV? And he was in the Heat.
He's a funny dude.
Great. Yeah. And when we did the podcast, he nicknamed Brad Packet.
Yeah.
He said, you're my little packet, my little condiment packet.
And you know what? I would take Packet over Dwarf, yeah, over Little Person.
I'm going to start calling, seriously, I've just thought of that,
yeah,
every person, a male person like you, a coxman.
He's I'm a coxman. I'm in full support of that.
Yeah, he's a coxman.
Yes.
What does that mean? Yeah, no, he's a coxman.
Yeah. He's a coxman.
Yeah, yeah, you'll know when you see him. He's a coxman. You'll understand completely. And that's where I'm going to go with it.
Yes.
So now, all little, I don't care where I am, yeah, what's quote a little person right, will now be known as a coxman, including the ladies.
Yes. And the same explanation. You'll yeah, know when you see it.
Yeah.
You'll know when you see it. They're coxmen.
Yeah. What was Hebrew school like? I would like to share. Were you funny in Hebrew school?
Yes, I was. Mm-hmm. I know one thing because others have told me this. Friends of mine from back then have said I would run into their class and shut the door because I was being chased by the principal or somebody. And I would you know, entertain their class until I would physically get thrown out by the teacher. Mm-hmm. And then I'd run into another class. And in my class, my Hebrew teacher for all Hebrew school was an Israeli woman named Rachel, who was a former soldier, as yeah, most of them are.
Yeah.
And she would whip erasers at me.
Jeez.
So,
I mean, you seem like the kind of guy where, I mean, you said you were a security guard, so obviously big muscular dude.
I played football and all that sort of stuff. I did sports when I was younger, yeah.
But then funny as well, because normally it's
always funny. Always, yeah. I've been the class clown, no exaggeration, since nursery school.
What?
Yes. One year
what
in
were
second
your moves
grade
then?
For like 2 weeks, everyone told me that this other kid, Brent Pincus, was mm-hmm, funnier than me.
Oh,
and
man,
I was so upset by it. And this other kid, Wayne Dunn. I remember these names. And this was back in like second, third, fourth grade. Like, and they'd have like a 2 week run, and then everyone would go, "No, you're the funniest again." I swear to God.
It's like,
but once these
kids come to third grade, flash in a pan.
But by the way, but once I got like into high school, it was just, you know, done. And even when I went to college, University of Miami and Broward Community College, I did both of those. And I was also known as the funny person then.
I'm so curious.
And I left University of Miami at 20 to go start doing stand-up.
Wow.
I became a comedian. I was studying film. This is Miami.
Okay.
I was studying film at University of Miami, and I went to the comic strip in Fort Lauderdale, and I passed auditions my first night.
No kidding. So
I've been doing it since 1982.
And even then, your act was
I tried writing back then. I didn't know any better. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like my act, because remember, I've been doing this 33 years. And so it just sort of evolved into what it is. It's about to evolve into something else, by the way.
You think?
Oh, really?
It's about to involve. I'm always going to improvise, but it's going to involve where, and I've been doing this a lot lately, where there's more stories with the improv around it.
Okay.
And the improvisation leads itself with
that.
A story. So I'll have, let's say a normal hour will be four stories.
Yeah, and you just kind of go along
with it. Yeah.
And you've reached a level of your career where people want to know your story. Like, people want to hear stories about Jeff.
Yes, Cohen. Yes.
So I want to hear a whole chapter about that Hebrew school. Like, first of all, what were your moves in second grade? When you would bounce from class to class, were you doing the
same?
That
wasn't in seventh or second grade. That was actual Hebrew school.
Okay. So.
Because when back in that's nursery school.
Right.
That's, what do they call it? Sunday school.
Sunday school, yeah.
Yeah, that's that. I was definitely a destructive force in Sunday school, but nothing specific like that. I'm telling you specific junior high Hebrew school stories.
So when you would bounce from class to class, same bit, or would you do
no like bit? I had no agenda,
but
there were no bits.
What were you doing when you?
I couldn't tell you. I was just funny.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell you what I did at the comedy store last time I performed there.
Yeah.
I was just funny.
Yeah,
some nights I'm not so funny to the audience. By the way, if I go up and I feel funny and I know I'm funny, it's the audience's fault if I don't do well. But there are times, and this is where my heart breaks, where they're a great crowd and I suck, and that one driving home hurts me.
Yeah.
And I hate that. That doesn't happen very often. It happens two or three times a year, you know?
Now, you don't ever, if you feel yourself driving down that path of, I'm not giving them.
It's not a matter of giving them. I don't have it. Especially when you improvise.
Yeah.
I'm human, and so I don't have it. my favorite nights not to have it are when the audience sucks. So we all suck.
Yeah.
Right.
That's fine. But when there's a crowd and they're just, you know, they're fucking good and you
comic
can't
before
get
you does well. Yeah. Comic after
well,
you
that
does
can,
well.
But that can also mean that they're hacks and they're just doing
yeah,
whatever.
True.
But you know, the groove that they're good. They're attentive. They're laughing at subtleties. It's like really nice. And you go up and you don't. I mean,
I've seen that with you. It's
deliver.
Lights out when you have a crowd that's just eating out at the store. Out
it
of
can
the
be amazing,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's also nights, and I really
there's nights when you choose to rip a future podcast host, and they're not so, and they're not feeling it. They're like, hey, we like this future star.
But man, when they're good, yeah. And I don't have it, and I'm just not funny. My rhythms are off. I don't feel right. Mm-hmm. Fuck, that's just, that makes
the
me,
worst.
What's yeah, it's
your,
bad.
What's, like, because we all have sort of what we do if a set doesn't go wrong. Do you have like a ritual where it's like, okay, well, I had a bad set tonight, so this is how I recover, or this is
no.
how I change?
If I'm feeling funny and I have a bad set, I've forgotten about, I tell the audience that, I go, please be insulted. by the time I go to the parking lot and get in my car, I've already forgotten this set and you, and that's completely true.
Wow.
Yeah,
so
it's healthy.
So you just completely put it out of your head.
If I know I'm funny, mm-hmm. and they're not a good audience, because audience, you understand, an audience, there's no scientific thing for what a good or bad audience is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't scientifically look at why someone's funny or they're not. Mm-hmm. But I will analyze in my head, and have over the years, audiences. And audiences, you have to take into account, these are a group of people thrown together randomly. What is their education? Mm-hmm. How do their parents treat them? How do they react to alcohol? How do they react to someone talking yeah. with a microphone in a dark room?
Right.
How was their day at work? How was their day with their wife? So it's all these random things
yeah.
thrown together in one room.
Mm-hmm.
So on a particular night where they've had, and if they've had a fucked up day, I want to make it better for them. That's my goal. Mm-hmm. is to ease their pain. But I'm just saying, sometimes chemically, an audience just stinks. They stink. Sometimes they can be, you both know this, they can be even mean
yeah.
and
yeah.
stink.
Yep.
So if I'm feeling funny and they stink, mm-hmm. fuck them. Yeah. It's too bad. It's too bad.
Yeah,
we could have had fun. It's too bad. If I'm not so good and they're good, mm-hmm. it's too bad for me, and it's sad to me.
Yeah.
But you still can erase it.
Yeah, but if they're not so good and I'm not so good, whatever, you just write that off, you know.
Now, do you approach like a talk show interview? Because I've heard you say, too, that you don't, that more often than not, you know these people who are interviewing
you. Yes, like
you.
When I did Jon Stewart show all the time,
yeah.
there was no pre-interview. However, I did Howard Stern once. And
you were phenomenal on it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a really
great
interview.
Dream. I've always wanted to do it. They never had me. The guy who did the pre-interview was great. Because he had a conversation with me. I don't mind doing pre-interviews conversations. But what happens is some of these people who are segment producers, what they do is they look for bits for you to recreate while you're on the panel.
Yeah.
And it's very inorganic, and I fucking hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't do those anymore. I won't go on the show if
right.
they want me to do the set bits.
Well, because that's a moment in time, and that was at one point, and that was funny at that moment. Like, why try
well,
to
but,
recreate
but, but,
it?
But recreating it, it lets a lot of times they want to use your stand-up bits. Like,
yeah.
tell
yeah.
that story.
Right.
And as a stand-up, that's great. But if I'm sitting, here's the thing, and I know this because of my friends who are all talk show hosts. Not all talk, but
yeah.
my friends who are talk show hosts. And I know from watching. Come on. Actors, actresses, a lot of people, not interesting at all. And they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people can come out and just be funny. So I understand the premise of the pre-interview.
Right.
Yes.
It is the
it's
most,
not for everybody, though.
With me, it is the most unnecessary thing. I remember a guy, this was in Cleveland, doing a radio show. So he did a pre-interview before I go on with him. And he's like he was like the main DJ. And
yeah.
he said, all right, what bits are you going to do? I go, what are you talking about? I go, you just talked to me. He goes, oh, I can't do that. I go, you can't have a conversation?
Yeah.
He goes, I can have a conversation. He goes, let's but I need
that.
You to do different bits. What do you do? I go, no, watch. We're going to have a conversation, mm-hmm. and it's going to be great. All right. So this dude, and this is maybe 15 years ago.
Okay.
And this dude, when I tell you, is sweating.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and shaking when we go on the air. When it was over, mm-hmm. he was like a survivor of a plane crash in a positive way. Like, I didn't think that was great, and it was supposed to be horrible, and I'm alive, and it's really fun, and I want to do that again. Like, the next time, he'd probably be a little bit sweaty, and yeah. then yeah. the 10th time, he would have no sweat.
Yeah. Holy shit.
But he didn't know you could do that.
You changed the game for him.
I did.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Hopefully he didn't get into old habits, and who knows if he's still on the air even. But the point being is that you're either funny or you're not.
Yeah.
And if you're not funny, I understand the pre-interview and having an agenda.
Yeah,
sure.
Scripted this and that movie yeah. and tell me that story that you think is real. You know, a lot of times in show business, what happens on talk shows is people's egos get hurt when they're not the first guest. If they're, mm-hmm. if they're like, I like being the first guest.
Yeah,
sure.
However, if you have Tom Hanks as your guest that night, I'll be the second guest.
Yeah.
I even did that
is
once.
Is there a list that you are okay being second fiddle to?
I don't give it out.
Cher. Hanks.
By the way, Cher,
Bonaducci.
Yes.
Bonaducci. Mario Lopez.
Mario Lopez. List. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, if someone's going to be entertaining and interesting before you, mm-hmm. then great, I'm happy being second. I don't care.
Sure.
But if you know, just because somebody's more famous
Paris
than you,
Hilton, if she's like a buzz and you have to follow that bullshit.
Well, that's mm-hmm. That's adding extra levels yeah. to it. But I don't want to slam anybody.
For so sure.
I'm not,
great.
No, I'm talking about her.
Oh, okay.
sure. We know she's not great.
Adam lies through his teeth.
But there are certain actors and actresses who you may even enjoy in movies, but you know you don't want to see them on a talk show.
Yeah. yeah.
And you say no. I just recently said no because I'm like, I am not following him. I love his work in movies, mm-hmm. but I will not follow him because there'll be no viewers left.
Yeah, I'll be like, well,
people will be done.
And they'll watch it go.
And I did that before on the same show.
Yeah,
they wanted me to follow this beautiful actress mm-hmm. who's a big Jessica Alba.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. okay. We don't like Jessica Alba for her storytelling technique. And also, she's not coming out and sitting there in a bikini.
Right.
Right.
So there's some reason to keep anyone on board because she's beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I refused. I said, I'm not doing it following her. Mm-hmm. I said, she's hot right now. I get it. But that's not. And so I didn't. Mm-hmm. And the next time they came back and said, what about Kanye West? I said, yes. Kanye West is hot. And he'll keep viewers in because he's going to do something.
Yeah.
And he did.
He'll say
he attacked MTV and Entertainment Weekly for not giving him the respect. I swear he did.
Yeah.
He had the number one album in the country, and he was slamming, you know, these people.
Which show was that on?
Jimmy Kimmel.
The
last time I was on, but I haven't been asked back until recently.
That's right. I watched that episode.
When I went on there and said, what the fuck is he talking yes. about?
Oh, wait. Was that the episode that he went on that whole long, crazy... People were posting yeah. clips of it saying yeah, it was, yeah. like, brilliant.
Yes. And then I went on after, and I borrowed from my publicist sunglasses and a scarf, you know? So you get the idea I was imitating because he had these sure. big sunglasses yeah. and a scarf.
Remember that.
I went out there, and I said, you know, I'm mad at Comedy Central. Because I'm not one of the greatest comedians, like all these things. And then yeah. I said, he's got the number one album in the country. And I'd met him before. He had done a pilot for HBO that I did a cameo in. And he was very nice yeah. and all this stuff. But, you know, so when I followed him and I did that, and then I finally at one point screamed, what the fuck was that about? And I hadn't been asked back until recently. But anyhow, he's going to be interesting and he'll keep viewers.
Right.
That's all you want. You know, if you're going to be on a show, well, if that show's interesting, great, I'll go on towards the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if 5 minutes in, if you're sleeping, it doesn't matter if you go on 15
yeah.
minutes in.
Yeah. The only couch thing I've done was Ferguson when uh-huh. he was coming out. And same thing where it was like they did a pre-interview. And in my head, I was like, God, I don't want to like... I'm at this point, the podcast has helped a lot with that, and then just stand up in general, and where I just feel very comfortable off the cuff.
Right.
And, you know, and doing radio stuff, even like, you know, and Brad kind of introduced me to the idea of just like not
right.
having planned bits because it's just so, And
whenever
you have
I go in. I say when they're like, "So, what do you want to lead me into?" I just go, "Just say hi to me."
Yeah, just
and
say
also,
hi.
You've been doing it long enough where you know, and I've done it with them where it's like if they set you, if they're talking about something that you do have something that might be appropriate for that moment. But so we get out there, and Ferguson, nothing that was in that pre-interview we talked about, and it was just like so. Now I can't imagine not doing it that way,
right? Of
because
course,
it was so much more.
However. Enjoyable. Conan O'Brien and I are old friends. We used to be roommates.
Yeah,
yeah, which is
and
incredible.
When I did his show, mm-hmm. I'm like name dropping like crazy.
No,
Odenkirk told me it was his favorite thing that I would do this. I went out on, and I wasn't like playing like I'm this person, but I went out on Conan. I said, no stand up, only doing panel. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll be, Robert Smigel was the producer with Conan then. He's like, yeah, you'll be better just panel. But I used to go out with a bit. Like I would go out and say like the Museum of Modern Art is honoring me and I would show clips of my movie career.
Oh, yeah.
But I would do bits that like Steve Martin would do.
Right.
Right.
You know, where he's making fun of himself.
Yes.
Yes.
But the joke was nobody knew who I was as I was doing all these bits as if I was a famous comedian
yeah.
all the time. And but I just sort of felt like that felt right to me.
Yeah.
And then one day I woke up and I was a famous comedian, and now I don't do the bits.
How did that? How did that friendship even? I mean, was
the friendship was actually through Bob Odenkirk. I was living in Chicago. I lived by Wrigley Field, and Bob said, "Can my friend Conan needs a place to live? I know you've got that extra bedroom. Can and I my first response I swear to God was Conan really? And he said, "Yeah, Conan." And then
yeah.
Conan moved in, and Conan was. A delight, and he was the funniest person. I at that point, the only other person that I can put in the same, well, there's three like outrageously funny people that are just so funny. Conan, Mitch Hurwitz, who created Arrested
yes.
Development,
wow,
is
yeah.
crazy funny,
yep.
and Amy Sedaris. These are people that are just. And by the way, I know a lot of funny people that
sure,
I really respect.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry if I'm insulting them. But these are the ones that come to mind as like being like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Right.
Funny. Like, it's unbelievable. So anyhow.
Sedaris, even in her little cameo in Chef, was incredible.
Oh, yeah. She was great. She
yeah.
she was in I Want Someone to Eat Cheese with.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yep.
yeah, yeah. She's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And she's, by the way, the stuff she does in Chef and the stuff she did in my movie, and that doesn't hold a candle to how funny she is.
Yeah.
She's crazy funny.
And she makes a killer brown Annie.
She man, her brown Annie, she invented the brown
Annie. I know she did. So Conan, so he said, you got to get this guy a place.
No, yeah. So he moved in, and he so tickled me. He was so funny that we used to do a fake talk show in our living room. And this is when Conan was a writer. Mm-hmm. He'd written on not necessarily the news and the Simpsons, and he just got a job on SNL, and they were on strike, and so he was not a performer.
Yeah.
And I never would have thought he's going to be this talk show
yeah.
host. And we do this one, and I was his only two guests. Jeff Garland, who was a Weisenheimer, would ask him. He was George Takei, by the way, at all times. It was called Wild Blue Yonder. And the other guest was Adam West, which is the only impression I do is Adam West. So Adam.
Yeah.
And so I was either Adam West or myself. And Adam West with George Takei, they would both really talk about not getting any residuals from the 60s, which no one did. And then I would come out and I would only ask him about residuals. And then the day Conan moved out as George Takei and Wobbly, he killed himself. He put a gun in his mouth. It was really funny.
What, was this a film you guys kind of did? Or like, did you film this?
Am I good?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. No, we didn't film it. We just did it for the fun. I'm fine, by the way, time-wise.
Like, yeah.
I don't care how many more minutes. Well, I'm good.
15 or so?
No, I thought she was signaling me, and she wasn't. And
okay,
we don't have a signal.
Okay, great.
That's how confusing
it is. Yeah.
Am I supposed to?
I was looking for a, yeah.
It's like, do me a favor and sit there when it hits the 3-hour mark. I can't go more than 3 hours. Be sure and do a soft shoe. They won't understand. They'll go, why is his assistant doing a soft shoe?
For the 3-hour mark.
Yeah.
But so it's just something you guys did for you? Just
for us. No, always.
Just to make you guys laugh.
But that's what that's what we did, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Curb Your Enthusiasm, we had no idea mm-hmm. anyone would find it funny. We were working in a vacuum the first season, especially. We just did what we thought was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And boom diggity, look.
You really have no, I mean, I hear it said all the time, which is, you know, the making a movie or a show, but you really have no clue and tell that how people are going to perceive it.
You have no idea how people are going to perceive it. Yeah. You can be proud of it and hopeful, but as far as...
But you're on set laughing and having a good time. And
oh, by the way, I've done things where we laughed and had a good time and it didn't turn out very well.
Yeah.
So you don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you can... You think you have an idea, but until the public gets a hold of it.
It's really, how's the public going to react? But no, by the way, there are times where you make something and you know damn well it's good, mm-hmm. and people you trust tell you it's good, and it just doesn't work financially. You know, and that can be marketing. That can be what slot your TV show's in.
Yeah.
When it premieres. Is, like, what the state of the country is at the time you're doing
sure.
your thing.
Yeah.
Now, does Conan let you, now you guys are still obviously buds, yeah?
Yeah.
Does he let you, I mean, you could call him any day and just say, hey, can I come on tomorrow to plug something, or just, I just want to go on just to hang out?
But by the way, yes, I can say that, and they'll get me on as quick as they can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's not like, I'm going to come on tomorrow.
Right.
Now, if it was life or death, I could go on tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, yeah. But that's what kind of life in the, my
ears hurt from the ACD concert. No, you're going to the penis. Let's go. Yeah, let's go to the penis.
My penis is going to fall off unless I get $100 from $100 singles. This is a spell that a witch put on me. You know what I'm saying? No, there's no reason.
Sure. There's no reason.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I could call and say, please have me on soon.
Is there anybody that you? Is there any? Who did you like grow up watching comedically that really got you?
Well, early on, Jackie Gleason. Jack Benny's probably my all-time favorite comedian. Mm-hmm. And Bob Newhart. I used to love the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And then Albert Brooks, Woody Allen. You know, David Letterman, huge.
That was your guy.
As a matter of fact, I started my stand-up career when his 12:30 show started.
Wow.
I used to skip college, my classes, to watch his morning show.
Okay.
So he had a. I couldn't watch it the last like 2 or 3 weeks. I couldn't watch. It was too emotional.
His
no kidding.
Morning show was in Indiana, I want to say.
His morning show was on NBC.
Oh, okay.
Chris.
Way too emotional. Just the ending of that era was just too much for you to.
For him
process.
To show then. Yeah. it was too much. But, you know, I used to work with Steve Colbert in the box office at Second City, and I did shows with him and perform with him, and I love him. And I think he's going to be a
wonderful
rock
fit.
For a long time, you know. And
that's wonderful.
But it's sort of everything changes. It's all temporary, the whole thing, even life. You know.
Would you ever
fall in love again? I don't know. What?
Get a new penis? No. Would you, watching you interview Larry at the Largo? That was a very quick thought of mine. Was how effortless you are in conversing with people, and especially somebody you know. And my immediate thought was. How lucky I felt to be watching that, and I was like, I feel so bad for anybody who's not seeing this live.
Oh, that's kind.
But
of
then
you,
I
yeah.
was like, you for sure could transition into that if you.
I
wanted
have gotten
to.
That compliment many, many times.
It's an amazing
and
compliment.
I really dig it. It's so nice. I would never do a nightly talk show. As a matter of fact, there's no amount of money to tie into that. But I would be interested in a Sunday night talk show and a weekly talk show.
Oh,
I very
like
much
a,
would.
Like a John Oliver thing? Or
yeah, it'd be different.
Political, but.
Well, but John Oliver's great.
Yeah.
He's unreal.
And he's unreal, actually.
Yeah.
I love him. But, no, mine would be more conversation, an hour conversation.
Yeah.
And it would literally be conversation. And it wouldn't be driven by, promoting.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
So it's everything that TV doesn't want. So, by the way, I think it would be a good thing, but I think I don't look at it and go, why won't someone do? I haven't tried, and I may try. I may. Let me just, right now, here's what you said we're wrapping up, so I'm going to tell you what I'm doing. I'm doing the Goldbergs. Mm-hmm. I've decided, I took a break from comedy clubs for a few months. It's been about 3 months, or so. And I'm going, I realize, because after 33 years, comedy clubs can just be a drag.
Yeah.
And so, but I realized, like, I've got a big benefit I'm doing at a theater in like 2 weeks. And I realized, well, how am I going to prepare for that? I have to go on stage.
Right.
So it's like the necessary evil. It's what it is it's practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the be-all, end-all. It's practice. And I'm sorry if I'm people who when they go up to the Comedy Store, think, this is the it, which I would have younger, right. earlier in my career. But
so not just are you talking about not just doing spots at the OR at the Comedy Store? You're talking about doing a weekend somewhere?
Yeah, I do a weekend. Yeah. I just did like some clubs, you know, about 5 months ago, and holy crap, it just burnt me out on it, you know. But I have to do what. Here's the thing: I have to do whatever to do to stay good. So I'm going back. I'm doing the store this weekend.
Good.
I'm doing what the hell's the Flappers, which
Flappers
the name
in Burbank.
But yeah. Flappers is the only place I ever play where I don't get around to doing anything except talking about the name. That's all I do is talk about why it's called 50 Flappers.
15 minutes of that?
Oh, I've done, yes. Wait, you said 15 minutes?
50.
Yeah, I did an hour and 10 on it. Jesus. I've done it. By the way, I can't control myself because it's nuts.
It is.
It's embarrassing. Where are you playing this weekend? I'm at Flappers. That alone tells people that you are
the
not
who,
successful.
The Who Chuckle Hut is next weekend. Yeah,
yeah. That's you know. So, but I'm doing that, but I'm also developing a miniseries TV movie type thing for Netflix with me as a detective.
Oh my
and
God.
I'm in the middle of writing it now.
Love it.
And
is this gonna be improvisational based?
The actors will.
What was that word you tried to pronounce?
Improvisation. I had a quick little brain hiccup.
All right. All sincerity,
yeah.
It'll be fully scripted with the actors encouraged to. Like, we'll get what we need to get. That's all. I'm not going to, like, worry about it.
And the people at your disposal looking at dealing with idiots, I have to imagine, are just ridiculous.
Well, actually, it's not going to be that kind of show where it's big ensemble. It's, I'll have a big guest actor playing the murderer. Mm-hmm. I say that where, you know, like, it's because it's like Columbo. You're going to know who the murderer is right away.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
As a matter of fact, my version, you really know right away.
You watch it happen.
Yeah, you know. No, in a different way.
Okay.
You'll see. But anyhow, so there'll be that, and there'll be actors that people like and stuff. I don't see anyone who's like really famous other than the murderer. Because, you know, you watch Law and Order, and the most recognizable guest person is the killer.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah, right.
Same with Columbo, but Columbo, they showed you the thing.
Yeah, this week, Glenn Close kills people.
Well, they don't. But yeah, it's close. Yeah. If Glenn Close is charged
available.
With murder,
yeah.
She's the one.
Right.
So I'm not fooling anybody on my show. My show will be a little bit funny.
Yeah.
But it's gonna be done real.
Yeah, it's not gonna be.
And
Glenn
so
Close
I'm working on that now.
That's great.
So between that and my stand-up, I don't have much time. And then the Goldbergs.
You love
everything.
The Goldbergs.
I do. Here's why I love
it's
the
awesome
Goldbergs.
Show.
Here's why I love the Goldbergs.
It's a great part for you.
It is a great part for me. I never thought I'd be on a network show. Not to say never. In recent years, doing Curb, doing more edgy stuff,
sure.
I never thought, oh, I'll be on a network show.
Because you get so conditioned to that way of working that you're
alternative,
like...
sort of like being an alternative, an indie film actor, like enjoying that sort of stuff. All right, so... I got the script, and I'm like, oh, this is actually good. And then I got clips of his real family. I'm like, oh, okay. So I said, well, as long as I can carve out that I can still do Curb, I'll do it. And we worked it out. Boom. Okay.
And that's a big deal because sometimes it just you're
that,
unable to do it all.
That doesn't happen. Yeah. It doesn't happen. You know, but I think a lot of the lawyers and executives are fans of Curb, so they don't want to be the one to stop it.
Right.
So, but here's the thing, man. I'm proud of the show. I think it's funny. I think it's well written. It's not necessarily something that I would watch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I get in trouble for this every time. But here's the point I want to make. People love the show. People come up to me and tell me all the time how good it makes them feel. And the fact that I'm on a show that makes people feel good, that they watch with their family, that's not soft.
Right.
You know, although the endings are... very, what's the word called? Where you know they can be like sad, you know. What was that?
Yeah, I was gonna say just sentimental, but I mean
sentimental.
Yeah,
perfect.
Great. Yeah,
they're very sentimental. Too sentimental for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I come from Curb Your Enthusiasm,
yes.
which comes from Seinfeld. You know, Larry David, which is no hugging.
Yeah,
yeah.
And now I'm on a show that pretty much every ending's a hug.
Yeah, no hugging.
So,
stealing
like I said, it's not my thing. But I am honored to be able to tell Adam Goldberg's story every week. And I'm honored that people love it and it makes them feel good. So for me, it is nothing but a positive experience.
Yeah,
love hearing
positive.
And the cast seems pretty awesome.
They're awesome, the cast. Awesome. I love them. Wendy McLennan Covey is just...
so funny.
I just am in awe of her. But point being is I'm honored to be on the show. And yeah, there you go.
You hope it runs for a while.
Yeah, not too long.
Yeah. Is there, can you, I mean... like?
I mean, I could see doing it for 7 years or so, you know. Mm-hmm. Those half-hour sitcoms that run into 8, 9, 10 years, it's like, what?
Yeah, they're still getting in trouble.
Yeah, they're still getting in trouble. But, you know, also it's a family thing. At that time, it'll be about, you know, the grandchildren and
sure,
all that shit.
The kids grow up, and then...
I have no interest in doing that.
Speaking of, and then we'll wrap this up, of final seasons, I mean, I'm sure everybody asks you probably all the time, but because it is my favorite show, and you don't have to tell me on air, but are there even conversations happening between you and
Here's what
LD?
I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell you the
real version after.
No, I'm going to tell you on the air.
I love it.
All right.
And you'll go, oh, you told me the real version off the... I'm going to tell you the order of things. Mm-hmm. I was at the Television Critics Association when they do all the shows and they do ask you, and I said 51%. It was actually the most I've ever been on the internet in a long time. 51%. And then I just did Rich Eisen's show.
Yeah.
And I upped it to, because of recent activity, I said 54%.
Hey.
And I just did an interview with the Wall Street Journal earlier today, and I said 56%. Ooh. You know what? It's 60%.
Oh, man.
Breaking news.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah, 60%.
That's a
solid
percentage.
And the only way I can go higher is 90% from here, because that'll mean that he's written episodes and he's passed five of them. If he starts writing episodes, I go 90 and then 100 when he's written more than five.
Wow.
Because, you know, he might write four and go, I don't like this. You
oh
know?
My God.
But I'd say 60%.
That's amazing.
And I'm going to leave it at that. And by the way, it's not because he's doing it or he said he's doing it, but we talked about it.
Yeah.
And he talked about it with somebody else involved in the show. And it's a big maybe. And maybe it's not 50-50, it's 60. We're 60-40, yes.
I love that.
I like it.
And on your podcast, and I will never go up past 60 on any other show.
I love that. Real quick, favorite episode of Curb?
Would be Wandering Bear.
Yes.
Wandering Bear is where Cheryl's vagina is bothering her, and Larry's looking for creams and such, and an Indian helps put a spell. He's got a thing, and when Larry and I are watching Girls Gone Wild, my dog gets run over.
Unbelievable.
Which doesn't sound funny, but I swear it's funny, and the dog's fine. Oscar. Yeah, that's my favorite episode, because it stands alone.
Yes. One of my favorite scenes when you and Larry are hovering over, I can't remember who it is in the hospital bed, but it's waiting for...
Oh, the big vagina scene?
Oh, my God. How much of that had to have been improv?
It was
your face when you're like, they love this. And Larry's like, they love... Yeah. You're doing the hand gesture.
No, we're making that up. But,
it's not
but
small it's, penis, it's
but
big
it's written
vagina.
That, Larry, that Jeff indicates, you know... you know, small penis, no big vagina, and we talk about it. So how we performed it was not...
Because you were so self-assured that when Larry was like, she said you had...
No.
And you
no,
were just
no,
like,
no, no,
no,
no,
it was the complete opposite.
No, yeah, no, no, sorry. Big vagina, huge. I remember it now because it came easy to me to say that because no one says that.
And Larry so immediately yes-anded that you were right, which is so great about that relationship, that he's like, oh, it is big, isn't it? And then you're like, oh, huge.
Yeah,
and
the end of the
like,
episode,
that.
The end of the episode, she has an autographed baseball in her vagina. So there you go. I was right.
Jeff, I'm so glad that we got to do this.
I'm really happy too. And here's the door being open again. I'd like to do it again.
Oh my God.
Please. Yeah, but when? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
But hey, but you know what? When is just having the door open? Is
Maybe a couple years.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but I think that you're both are on your way to big success.
Thanks, man.
You should still do this out of fun if you have time.
Well, we do.
But it's a big thing, man. If you're both on, let's say you're both on hit shows, it's hard to do this. Imagine that.
It is.
So when people say, please do it, I really want to. But I swear it's hard to pull it off.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm you're young, much younger than me, both of you. I'm tired, man. I'm I'm heading into my elderly years. I'm pre-elderly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know? I mean, it's almost 4 o'clock, so if you're pre-elderly, you probably have to get to bed pretty soon. There.
I'm actually going to meet my friend Flanny for coffee right now.
I love
Wonderful.
That.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you again for doing this.
Gentlemen, you're my pleasure. You're the best.
Thanks,
thank
Jeff.
You.
So
that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes on iTunes or your phone. Subscribe and tell your family and everyone you know.
But what should I tell them? Well, you can just tell them that
Brad Williams and Adam Ray can help you get through the fucking day. Just follow us on Twitter at Funny Brad, and I'm at Adam Ray Comedy.
This has been the About Last Night podcast. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's me, Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.